Third hour, Darren Dottick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Dottick, Chase McCabe with you. 2 more hours to go. Got a lot of things to tackle, including Mike Vrabel, his press conference at 12:30. We will air that live here on these airwaves, hear what Titans head coach had to say after the 25-16 victory over the Colts yesterday. A little bit of a stall. The players, I guess, are running behind in Knoxville, so maybe we get Vince on, maybe we don't. By the way, you can join us in partnering with Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we want to raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. That event is coming up as we're about ready to wrap up September. Hard to believe.
I was hanging up our program grids and everything this morning, and I was like, it's September 27th. We just started September.
It's flying.
Now, personally, I'll be happy when this month is over because this month can kick rocks as far as I'm concerned, but it's just hard to believe that it's already October.
And I would like to thank the Balls for blowing my top shelf. It was looking so good the entire night. And then two ways to get the cover at the end, both go sour. Florida gets the late touchdown. Tennessee comes all the way back down the field and has a chance to score, to recover.
Yeah.
And neither goes my way.
So I got to give Ryan Porth a shout out and some credit on something, because we were talking about this on the money line, and he said that a bet that he likes is because a lot of people were looking at 19 or 18 and a half, you know, whatever you got it at for the Vols to cover. And he said the play to me is take the Vols plus 10 and a half in the first half. And I said, you know what, that's spot on, because they're going to be hyped up. It's Florida. They'll probably play better than maybe you would expect, and they did. And so they were right there in it in the first half.
And I'm sure we'll talk to Vince about this, but, you know, they had a couple of swing plays where if they just execute the play, then they would have been able to stay in the game the whole game. You know, they just couldn't quite do it at the key times. But I think there's some flickers there of things that aren't all bad. You know, it doesn't end up well, especially if you bet on it. This is why I don't bet.
Yeah.
But for pick six purposes, man, I was on a roll. I hit the 7-point week last week. I'm feeling good. I'm like, whoa, we're off to a great start. It's 14-10. I was like, they got this covered easy. And no. And then Joe Milton proceeds to miss guys. He had three chances to throw a touchdown pass in the final possession in the closing seconds. It's garbage time, but it would have been the cover. And he must have missed the guy. I mean, he's missed some guys by long stretches, but he might have set a new personal record for how bad he missed an open guy there.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. He's not good.
Like, the ball almost hits the back wall.
It all makes sense now why he transferred.
Yeah.
Was available. I mean, it's like me in cornhole, Darren. Like, when I first started playing cornhole, it's just throw it in the woods.
Well,
four.
Yeah, and this is they all say it, and it was Greg McElroy on Saturday was saying, if they can harness. I mean, that's the kind way for saying this guy's got a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. This guy can't hit the broadside of a barn.
Well, to me,
if he's healthy,
Hendon Hooker's going to be the guy moving forward. I mean, he's definitely the better of the
that
two.
That certainly looks like the case. Yeah.
I was kind of when he got hurt, I was like, okay, go to Bailey. Let's see what Bailey can do here.
But he can't move Bailey. Yeah. Like, they, I think in that offense, it does really help if you're quarterback, especially where they are right now. You need some mobility there.
Yeah.
Because they have trouble protecting as it is.
I wanted to bring this up, and this is what I know to end the last hour, but it's not really a topic that we can get into, and I felt like it's something we can at least talk about, and so we may have to push Vince into the final hour. I'm not sure if this is going to work since we're going to air Vrabel's press conference at 12:30. But I don't know, you probably weren't watching Boise State and Utah State on Saturday. I was watching it for silly underdog purposes.
Yeah.
There wasn't much to see there. Utah State squad.
I was watching
so
for other purposes.
Many opportunities. But I don't know if you guys saw the forward progress. There was an absolutely horrendous call involving forward progress. And the reason I bring this up is, does football not need to – don't they need to revamp this rule, like forward progress? Like, I just think there are so many advantages given to the offense. Why is there another rule? Like, why do we just assume – like, there's just so many plays you see where – now, wait a minute. The player is fighting and scratching. The play is alive, and because they get tackled in the end zone – they're like, oh, no, it was out here at the half-yard line. That's when his forward progress. What? Like, if they're still fighting, no, forward progress is if the literally he's standing there and there's like four people piling on him and then they fall in the end zone. Like, that's forward progress stopped at the half-yard line. Obviously, it happened in the Titans game. We all believe that game should have ended
on
safety.
Yep.
It was a safety,
it
period,
was totally
bottom
safety.
Line. Like, don't you think that football needs to get back, whether it's – the NCAA, the NFL, and they need to get back in a room and rethink this forward progress, generous spots. It's like we're scared to call a safety, right? Like, a safety's a safety.
I think it's always going to be a tough one to officiate. The one in the Titans game, that shouldn't have been as hard.
It was a safety.
That looked pretty
clear. Well, the
Utah
State game, honestly, if you watched it, it was the same deal. Like, it was a safety.
Okay, because the other thing I think about when you're saying a play like that is what we see a lot now is in a short yarded situation, you have this big wall, right? The defense tries to wall up with layers, and then the offense has the guy who's carrying the ball and then two guys coming in behind to push from behind and just have the big rugby scrum to try to aid the runner, which you used to not be able to do. But now it's like, so how in the world do you officiate where the ball is and where the forward progress is on plays like that?
Here's my thing on forward progress, and I've always felt this way, because if follow me here, if a quarterback gets sacked, that's you lose yards because the ball is well behind the line of scrimmage and you did not advance it, and so you lose yards. If you're in a situation like that, you're in the end zone and you're pushed forward, I was always taught to play to the whistle, right? I've always heard play to the whistle. The play ends when it's whistled dead.
Right.
If you are pushed forward and then you are pushed backwards and then the whistle is blown.
You get into a gray area there.
No, there is no gray area. That's a loss.
But it's a loss. It can be tough to officiate.
No, like forward progress to me shouldn't even be a thing.
Right, blow the whistle and call it dead.
Right.
Why don't they ever call
it? I don't think it's that easy.
When it's cut and dry, it's easy.
Well, wait a minute. Why is it okay?
A sack is cut and dry, so it's easy. But when, but no, I'm Darren, I'm with you. Like, if you're in the end zone and you have the ball and you push forward, but then you are pushed back and then the play is blown dead, you're still in the end zone. The way I see it.
So let me tell you, I'll try to paint the picture the best I can on radio for this play, because like I said, I understand our audience probably wasn't paying attention to Utah State and Boise State on CBS.
Darren bringing up
they were the Titans game, so you can incorporate that. I mean, it's are similar.
But I want to tell you, try to do the best I can and tell you, but now keep in mind, I had Utah State. I'm rooting hard for Utah State. This is Utah State, the one that the safety should have been called against. Like, they should have been giving up 2 points to Boise State. So that tells you how much how adamant I am, because it's going against the team that I was actually rooting for, because Utah State was my silly underdog pick. Boise State booms a punt, and the Utah State player goes I just shake my head. Like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? The kid is pedaling back, and fields it at the one. What are you doing? What are they telling you? What is the golden rule? You don't ever field that ball, right? You let it go into the end zone.
You wave and you yell, Peter.
Right.
Stay away from it.
He's going back, and fields it at the half or the 1 yard line. I was like, what are you doing? And of course, all of a sudden, he's getting pelted by Boise State players and he's bouncing all over the place, which guess where when he's while he's being bounced around like a pinball, where do you think he ended up and eventually on the ground? In the end zone. And they're like, yeah, no, he's here at the half-yard line. No, he wasn't. He was still trying to fight to get out of that spot and justify why he fielded the ball. And he never even came close. I mean, he was bouncing around. How is his forward progress stopped there when he's still trying to keep the play alive, and the play is alive, and then he eventually gets swarmed in the end zone and taken down? They're like, yeah, no, he was here at the half-yard line. No. Why does the offense or special teams in this case, why do they get the benefit of the doubt? I don't understand
that. I don't either. I mean, I don't get that. I think it's something that probably isn't going to change. Yes, they need to address it, but this is one of those that, you know, they're not going to. And I put that in the category of you fumble out of the end zone, and it's a touchback. You know, it's one of those, like, yeah, what are we doing here?
It's another bad rule.
Yeah, just the bad rules. And so, but
when
they're
you
not
say,
going
Willie,
to.
It's not that easy. No, it is. If you feel like the play is dead in the Seattle Titans game, or in this case, this game, then you immediately blow the whistle. Like, they're not blowing the whistle or the play dead until after basically they're in the end zone and on the ground. And then you're going, oh, wait a minute, but it was right here at the half-yard line or the one-yard line. Well, why didn't you blow the whistle dead then if that's where the play stopped? You see what I mean? Like, how can it be that easy if they're not blowing the whistle or the play dead?
I think the examples you are saying are pretty clear-cut, but I'm saying the general concept of forward progress isn't always that clear-cut. There's a lot of
– but I think
there's reasons why the rule is what it is, and not just the examples that, you know, probably they – in fairness, they botched on a couple of these.
I've never understood.
It's a goofy rule.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Like, why if you're going.
But you have to have something set in there.
But
like,
why,
what would your. Okay, tell me what your alternative is then.
The ball is when the whistle happens, when the ref blows the whistle, wherever the ball is where the ball is. Like, that's. If you
are. So I can keep pushing you back and pushing you back and pushing you back.
Until they blow the whistle.
It's not pushing back. What about them fighting?
You're
acting like they're just like.
Because they're trying to protect players from getting body slammed and things like that. That's why they put that in there. There's a reason why they put it in there.
But we applaud a guy like Derrick Henry when he's got
six. That's the gray area.
When he's got six guys hanging on him and he goes forward, but he's still. It's clear. He is moving forward.
Yeah.
He could have six dudes hanging on him. And he's still going forward, and we
just
applaud
like the
that.
Commercial, just like the commercial,
right? We applaud that, and we say, okay, he gained 10 yards with everybody hanging on him. But if the defense does their job, and they are pushing him back, and they push him back 6 yards, yet they say forward progress, it's only, you know, like they only pushed him back 2 yards or whatever. Like, no, they didn't. You play to the whistle. The whistle didn't blow.
What you're saying is impossible. It's impossible that you could do that right, because the whistle isn't always blown where forward progress is stopped. Like, I could get the ball across and then get knocked back, and by your thing, if the whistle blows when the ball gets knocked back, I don't have the first down.
Okay, well,
but I got there. I crossed the line.
All right, Your Honor, I'll come in with another piece of defense here. We always talk about this magical line of the plane, and when you break the plane and it stretches around the world and all this silliness that we've come up with. But when you break the plane, it's a touchdown, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Why doesn't it count the other way? Even though you come out with it and you've broken the plane, if you're pushed back and you break the plane again, why isn't that a safety right away? As soon as that happens,
the safety rule is a weird
deep thought.
It's not the same concept. I understand. I don't understand all of the nuances of the safety. It doesn't happen as much, but you're right. There is a different.
Well, I think Darren said it earlier. They're scared to call a safety. You just I know.
Yeah, it seems like they try to avoid calling the safety when possible.
I know, but why? I mean, it's a rule. I mean, that's
the Raiders had
it's in the rule book, and I mean, why?
Because don't you have to bring the ball all the way out? Like, if a running back is carrying the ball from the end zone, doesn't he have to get all the way out? Like, he can't just break the plane of the end zone line. He's got to get all the way into the 1 yard line area. Like, he's got to cross the plane completely. It's a different.
If this Utah State player, as he was getting pinballed around, going backwards, as players are just taking shots at him and he's trying to still get the heck out of the end zone. If he does a spin move and he just makes this unbelievable play and takes off down the right sidelines, are they going to give him that or are they going to whistle it dead? What if he goes 45 yards or goes to the house? Because Boise State had committed, they're pot committed on that play. And what if he somehow gets out of it and takes off? Are they going to blow it dead?
Darren,
are they going to award him the touchdown?
I think you would feel better. I think you need to call a ref and have a little session at home tonight. Maybe call the ref that was involved in the Boise State game. Just talk to him for a while.
I'm just saying, don't you think they would? The answer is they would always give him that.
I am not a rules expert on some of these things. I feel like Darren needs some therapy and needs to.
If Russell Wilson
completes, you need to vent to a ref.
No, if Russell Wilson completes the pass, do they call that a completed pass? The answer is yes. So why would they award him that he was still fighting and they awarded a complete pass, but yet if he doesn't get out of it and he gets tackled, they say, oh, no, the play progress was dead here. But yet if he falls in the end zone
to the
and
choir.
Throws
Everybody agrees
a complete
with you on that
pass, they're going to give him the pass. So why?
I know, you're bitter. I we all agree on that one. That
Do
was
we?
That was a botched call.
Okay, but all right. That's why I brought it up. I'm saying, don't they need to?
But you're bringing in
this?
The Boise State, Utah State. I just feel like you have a problem, Darren. You need to vent to an official. You need to get this off your chest. Talk to a ref. That's just my diagnosis. That's my recommendation. This is really stuck in your
craw. We'll do this. Which of the TV refs do we think is the best?
The TV refs?
Yeah. So Pereira or
they're all really good.
Terry McCullough. Well, yeah. I don't think they're all really good.
I disagree.
Pereira still sets the standard.
I don't
for
think
me.
They're all.
Mike Pereira still, and then Gene Serator is number two
Gene,
for me.
Yeah, I think Perry does an okay job with ESPN. Terry McCauley. Okay, so
Pereira is still he's number one for me because he's still the first.
Who was the one that was just awful and he didn't even make it a year?
Mike Carey.
Okay, it was Mike.
And then Gene Serator.
He had a couple of big. Big mistakes,
well,
Mike Carey.
Yeah, he was bad.
Well, he missed all the time.
Serator has been a big upgrade.
Elijah, that's your assignment. Go get us a TV ref. Let's get a TV ref on this week.
A TV ref.
Just for Darren.
That's what they are. They're the TV refs.
No, but I think we should call the actual ref who's refereeing the Boise State-Utah State game because that's huge
if
for Darren.
If you get that
right
guy's number, then call him too.
I would gladly
just get some
have
numbers.
Him on the show.
Just get somebody.
All right,
Darren
we'll come
needs
back.
Help.
So what? It's lesser because it's Utah State and Boise?
I don't know why. You just started down this road, Darren, of the Boise State, Utah State
game. Because I was watching it.
But it was a good discussion. I liked the discussion. So
we'll come back. We'll hear what head coach Mike Vrabel had to say after the victory over the Colts. We will not ask him, but you'll hear from him next. Back here on Darren, Donica Chase, presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD. Products curated for life. 94.9 is the official English radio home of Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Wednesday as Nashville SC takes on Orlando. That'll be at Nissan Stadium. Pre-game starts at 7:15. The match begins at 7:30. Do we think Mike Vrabel will talk about a clean sheet yesterday? What do you think? Chase, your thoughts.
A clean sheet?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to come.
Well,
I'll tell you what, we have not
considered Joe Willis as a possible kicker if things go awry.
Well, I said two weeks ago, Hani Mukhtar.
What is going on with the kickers? How are they getting kickers injured so much? Are you kidding me? How is this happening?
Is somebody else hurt?
I don't know.
Well, what do you mean? Is Bullock not hurt? Is he not injured? Something going on?
No, he's fine.
I haven't heard anything about Bullock.
No.
Huh.
I think what you're bringing up is people have been saying, when is Ficken going to be available?
Yeah, we asked that last week. You guys emphatically said just keep rolling with him.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
I'm good with I'm not going to go that far, but I would stick with Randy right now.
I think you just have to.
Did I hear Toronto or maybe Joe this morning? I thought I heard somebody say he got dinged up, and I was like, what?
No, they were talking about just when is Ficken coming back.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, good Lord, how many times can their kickers keep getting hurt?
No, they brought up what we brought up after Bullock was the hero last week and clearly has now made it through a second week, is that if this continues in this direction and he's doing the job, but Ficken won the job and then got hurt, do you consider bringing Ficken back? Because Ficken did show some talent. Boy, he was not just making them. He was blasting them high.
Preseason.
Right, but Bullock, you know, he doesn't look like he's got a lot of range. I haven't seen him from 50-plus. By the way, Rodrigo Blankenship is now 1-for-4 from 50-plus in his career.
Yeah,
hot rod. But here was my thing.
That was a big miss yesterday.
Yeah. Was it?
It was. Here's my thing.
For my purposes, it definitely was because I picked the Colts.
I think the head coach is talking. So let's go over there. Let's hear from Mike Vrabel.
That stadium's been through a lot.
Mike, you said Julio was sounded like you were saying he was a bit of load management almost. John said when he brought him here, he loved the way that he dug out safeties, and you did throw the ball after you stopped playing him. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. Excited. Let's get to the game, and then we'll address that. Excited about the way we finished. You know, we knew that this was going to be a battle. We knew that this was going to be a four-quarter football game. You know, we executed in some critical situations. Defense was great on third down. Much better on the red zone, and you can see that those are big factors in helping us win. We got to take care of the football. That's going to cost us. We got to start turning the football over. Our right tackle can't lead our team and cause fumbles. Our special teams started to compete. You know, there were some cool opportunities that Chester, you know, catching the football, guys blocking. You know, Chester averaged 14 yards a punt return. So that was something that, you know, was huge in the game. You know, we ran the football at times, but then things got to just have to be cleaner. And then, you know, as it relates to your question, you know, about Julio, you know, guys go through games, guys get tight. And, you know, I felt like it was in the best interest of our football team and everybody involved that he be available in an emergency situation at that point in time. There hasn't been, other than one admitted, I would say, lapse in judgment in the first game, which everybody would agree on, myself, the team, Julio, there hasn't been one situation where I was disappointed. He's played physical. He came back, played great last week, played physical yesterday, and that's where we were.
When you say tight, Mike?
Guys get tight throughout the game. So we're not – Yes, physically tight, yeah. So, listen, guys, this is going to be the least I talk about injuries. So that's what we do. This is not an issue with his performance. This isn't an issue with anything other than, you know, me making a decision and saying, hey, man, let's see if we can, you know, get through this and survive and win this football game and see if, you know, it's a long season.
Injuries. Rashad Weavers, it looked like he may be out for a while.
Yes.
Did taking Chester off kickoff returns help him with punt returns, you think?
Probably helped him not get killed, but maybe. He's done a nice job for us. You know, the one that he punted, you know, the one that they punted, you know, their gunners went both to the other side. And sometimes when you have these punters that kick these boomerangs, which, you know, we identify as those ones that go across the field, you try to read the gunners. And so both gunners, you know, went in that direction. So he thought the boomerang. And so I don't know if the punter, you know, did something other than what they normally do. But Chet went over there and fair caught that one that would have probably rolled down there inside the 10. I thought that was a great play. Thought it was well schemed and well executed on the first punt that looked really close on the sidelines. You know, we were going to try to plan on returning that and blocking it up. And Chet had a lot of trust in those guys because, you know, usually those plus 50 punts, guys are down there in your face. And so that was a huge play. And, you know, we got some good yardage out of the punt return. We just got to start going with this kickoff return a little bit.
It wasn't the opening kick, but you had a guy running on late on an early special teams play. Seems like that's happening once in a while.
When else did it happen? Preseason?
I'm thinking there was another time.
When you tell me what it is, and then I'll answer the question.
Well, what happened with the one yesterday?
Jeremy was probably frustrated that he didn't do a great job on the third down play and came off the field, I'm sure. But, you know, that's just a speculation. Proud of Jeremy, way he came back and protected and stuck his nose up in there and then, you know, had a great route. Ryan gave him a great ball and, you know, caught a huge touchdown there at the end. So that's a good reminder to all of us that you can start the game a certain way and be frustrated and maybe not do the best that you could and then come back and late in the game make a huge play, which I was proud of him for.
About the pass rush, and maybe from Ola and then maybe Harold, who only maybe had a half sack, but it seemed like he impacted the game with a lot of pressures. Did that stand out to you?
Yeah, it did. I thought Harold played extremely hard. I thought Ola continues to help us. You know, and Harold's impacting the game. He's playing hard and he's trying to get around the quarterback. And I know that, you know, the ball will start to come out. He, you know, he's going to start, you know, continue to keep reaching, trying to find the football when he gets around the quarterback and hope that it comes out and the numbers start to reflect, you know, maybe what his effort in his, you know, not his production certainly, but his performance.
I think it was three times in the low red zone, but they only got one score. What was kind of clicking for you guys in that area when you talk about situational football?
Well, I mean, we got, you know, we played well. We did pressure the quarterback on a few of those incidences. And, you know, Breon, you know, made a play there in the corner. And, you know, we did a decent job there. And unfortunately, they got the one in there with Hines on a kind of little misdirection play. Harold squeezed and, you know, he wrapped one over the edge on a run. So, you know, give them credit. That was a, you know, good scheme. And But we did buckle down and we played, you know, good pass defense when, you know, most of those plays down there were passes.
David Long's play elevated itself to the point where you consider him a starter now and have basically three interchangeable guys for two spots.
He started the last two games, I think. So I think that would qualify him as a starter, playing fast, being productive. He flies around, you know, he beats running backs in protection. I think if you watch back, I don't think that you know, the running back, you know, really picked him up. I thought he beat the backs when he was given the opportunity.
Did you give up two fourth down conversions on a drive and still hold them to a field goal there?
Well, a short yardage defense has to be better. You know, it's about, you know, getting lined up. It's about, you know, whipping somebody and about making a play. You know, you got to knock somebody back. You got to throw somebody on the ground. And that's what short yardage is. They don't have that much. It's the same way for us. We got to cover them up, get movement. You know, we had a couple good short yardage runs, but so did they. You know, and so we didn't get any stops there, but we did. You know, again, if you look back, and again, we don't want to talk about last year, but the third down in the red zone were huge things for us. And yesterday, you know, proved pivotal because again, it ended drives. Less opportunities for Hines and Pittman's and Taylor and, you know, Pascal and obviously everybody else, you know, right? So then when we get down there to the red zone, we're able to force them to kick field goals.
You guys won the game last week. Come from behind fashion. You talked about how that can help your team sort of grow together and then take it forward. Is yesterday kind of the same? It wasn't your best effort, but you find a way to win. Is that important to have that both from a teaching standpoint and from a growth standpoint?
Well, I think there's some, you know, just obviously some resiliency about just being a winner and understanding how to win and playing complementary and when you need a long drive and when you're in 4 minute. You know, I think that the play that goes unnoticed was the play that Ryan had. You know, Cam Batson's out in front, sees that he's gonna scramble or gonna turn it up. You know, Cam turns and blocks his guy and really allows Ryan to not get hit. And then also, you know, get to the first down marker and stay in bounds. So I thought that was a huge play. There was some good understanding there of situational football.
You were picking actives and inactives yesterday. Was Josh Reynolds unavailable? Or was he a healthy scratch?
He was inactive.
You see some parallels between your playing career and Ola now. He says he's firmly committed to special teams, but the only thing that's changed for him defensively is opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens, man. I said, get this guy some more snaps. He only goes in there three plays and gets a pressure and a sack on two of them, so keep playing him. And, you know, unfortunately, I think we had a penalty on another one of his sacks. So he plays hard. He's physical, and, you know, he's done a nice job for us just thus far.
First interception by Ryan. I know it didn't sound like you were obviously too pleased about it yesterday. I wonder if you got a chance to
I'm
look
not
at
it. I'm still not as pleased with it.
did you get a chance to look at it again on tape?
I'd seen it once. I didn't need to
okay.
watch it
twice. Like Ryan mentioned, there was like kind of a miscommunication.
There you go.
Okay.
The guy throwing the ball says a miscommunication. Guess who am I to tell you any differently?
You said you gave him a little bit of grief about not sliding. And what's the line there where you want him to be aggressive, make a play, get as many yards as you can, but also don't take
get down
a big hit?
Save yeah. yourself and save the equipment.
Yeah. How do you get that through to him? And
I don't know. Great competitor, you know, gritty, tough competitor. Just trying to be smart. You know, when you're coming back into the middle of the field, I think that you have to use great judgment. There's guys that are coming for you. There's safeties that are back there. And, you know, he's just got to know when the journey's over and, you know, be able to get down. But, you know, really appreciate his toughness each and every day. What's that, Joe?
On that play, it looked like Nichols and Hudson basically just ran into each other. Right? Talk about that pick.
Right.
So is that obviously the timing's thrown up? Is that just a ball at that point with Ryan?
Just use great judgment. You know, use great judgment. You know, with the football, everybody's trying to make a play. Have to make it a good one. And again, we have to continue to protect the football, whether we're throwing it, you know, or whether we're carrying it or whether we're catching it. You know, we saw all three of those instances where we threw an interception. You know, we threw what should have been a completed pass that because of improper technique bounced off our shoulder pad and it was intercepted, and then, you know, they were able to rake one away from us. So we'll continue to focus on that and add some more time to the ball disruption and ball security period this week.
Which of your guys, if any, are you expecting off IR this week?
I haven't made those decisions yet.
AJ go down with the hamstring, and then he had the drops the previous week. He was on social media just kind of saying, you know, acknowledging that it's been a tough couple of weeks. As a coach, like putting those emotional deposits, like how do you coach him through this time period, you know, and help him understand that it will get better?
Well, I have a great relationship with AJ. You know, I feel like that's grown over the time that he's been here. You know, we have some great conversations. We've put a lot of trust in each other as far as, you know, those things that are discussed in those conversations. So we'll obviously keep those between AJ and I, but, you know, I'm confident that, you know, he'll do his best to get back out there and be a, you know, be the player and the person that, you know, that we've come to expect. And, you know, we all go through things throughout the course of a season. It's a long season and we all deal with a lot. And I'm confident that, you know, everybody, including AJ, will, you know, be able to weather some of those storms.
You talked about Julio yesterday left a lot of room for interpretation, and today you said he's tight. Did you intentionally not say that he was tight?
No, I just needed to go. Carter was pitching, and I needed to go watch him pitch. So I told Teresa it would be 7 minutes. She said, texting me, it was 6:55. No, it just We always go down this road with injuries, and again, I can't be more adamant that Julio's performance and what we've asked him to do hasn't been perfect. My coaching hasn't been perfect. Everybody else hasn't been perfect. But he's done what we've asked him to do, and he's played with great effort. So, you know, if I wasn't as clear as maybe I should have been or we would have liked me to be, I'm just trying to tell you that, you know, it wasn't a performance-related thing, and that we'll continue to make sure that we get guys ready for the game and make sure that, that their health and safety is paramount. And you know, we'll see who's available this week. We'll see how everybody else feels. We got a long injury report on Monday, and we practice on Wednesday.
What would you say about the offense in general and maybe Ryan specifically, that you were still able to get the job done given the injuries, some of the personnel that was in and out?
Well, I think it's just a great reminder for everybody that's going to practice throughout the week that if they know what to do and they're willing to go play fast and aggressive, they have an opportunity to affect the game, hopefully positively, and get some opportunities to do whatever, whether that's at the offensive line level, whether that's Ola at the outside linebacker level, the receivers that went in there, Torrey Carter, who was playing special teams, playing his first game, whoever that may be. You know, just being ready for your opportunity and making sure that you take advantage of it, and some of those guys will earn more opportunities.
How did LeJuan play yesterday?
How did LeJuan? He was okay. You know, I mean, there were some good things and, you know, some plays that he'd like to have back, I'm sure.
How do you get the turnovers to flip? I mean, you work on it in practice and obviously try to get your hands on the balls, but how does that generally flip? How can you have an impact on that?
How can I have it?
Right, as a staff.
They ain't letting me go out there and try to punch the ball out. I meant you just keep practicing it, keep trying to put them and, you know, look for situations where somebody's making a tackle and a second guy's coming in, looking for opportunities to break on the football, continue to try to, you know, tip the ball at the line of scrimmage. You know, more hands that we get on it, you know, probably – the percentages go up that we're going to be able to intercept it or turn it over and try to keep getting them from the quarterback.
Would have led to Bud playing yesterday. What would have needed to happen to get him out there?
I don't even know how to answer that. A couple more guys would have had to go down, I guess.
Unusual to use an active spot on somebody who's very unlikely to play. You'd see you. Potential advantage to somebody else being active there?
No. I mean, it's, you know, we had everything covered and filled with, you know, the bodies that we had, and, you know, that was the decision that I made. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Mike.
All right.
There you go. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
We have a few things to chew on, don't we?
Well, we can go on and chew if you want.
Well, I thought that was an important question at the end on Bud Dupree, is you activate a guy and he doesn't play a single snap. So what's going on? Mm-hmm. And you have that mystery, and of course you have the obvious Julio Jones, which, to the credit of the group, they tried different ways to get him to expound on what
and
happened.
He didn't want
and
to.
It's yeah, you could tell he was really, really choosing his words.
Yeah.
As carefully as he could, and there's still some things he just does not want to reveal. And I don't know if for certain he's going to be available on Sunday. Like he kept saying a couple times, we'll see how everybody is. Like, so the tightness, you know, he's walking the tightrope of, did the coach take Julio out because of the tightness? Or did Julio say, hey, I'm a little tight, maybe hold off. I'm available if I need to be. And that's where the clarification, they could have revealed some of that dynamic. I don't think there's anything bad either way. And I like the point. I think the point that Vrabel is trying to make is it's a long season. I want this guy, who is a critical guy for our team, to be available all year long. I don't want to lose him early, when I know I've already lost my guy on the other side, AJ
right.
Brown. So I don't think there's anything wrong in this. People would just like to know a little more detail on what happened, and he's clearly does not want to say.
Let me present another thing to this, another layer, though. Don't people have the right, when you think about Julio Jones, an elite wide receiver in the league who's been doing it for a long time very successfully, who didn't play in preseason, has barely practiced. NFL teams, and in this case the Titans, have, you know, they have facilities and they have a big train, a staff of trainers that are at their beck and call, that are constantly working on these guys, constantly doing stuff to them, constantly put them in the best position to be upright and available every single week at as close to full capacity as possible. Don't people have the right to say, like, the guy's barely, I mean, his workload has been pretty minimum when you really think about it. And, like, he played the first half, he was good, and it's like, but now he's tight in the second half. We've heard this stuff before. I mean, this is not new. People in Atlanta will be saying, see, we told you guys.
I think that's what Vrabel's trying to avoid. Do you think that's he's trying to avoid that coming up?
That's why I'm bringing up this, because I think he obviously doesn't want that to be the issue. He does not want this market sitting there talking every day about this Julio Jones stuff that has been out there floating around and stuff that we talked about in the offseason, and it become a big focal point in this market when it was in Atlanta, and he doesn't want that carrying over to here. And I think he's desperately trying to protect that, which I completely understand. But doesn't it feel like that's exactly what's going on?
The concept of load management is not foreign to fans and media now. It is something that's commonly used in the NBA, and I don't think it's the worst theory to say, how do I get the most out of Julio Jones? But I think he wants to avoid going down that road, especially in a game that was very important, that was 14-13. When he's load managing, it's at a critical time in the game, and they win the game.
Right.
But I feel like that concept is sort of there, right?
But load management in an 82-game season, isn't that more understandable? I mean, you could go in an NBA schedule and pick where a team could play four games in 1 week. They could play four games in 1 week. Like, wouldn't you understand?
I think it's different with the 17-game season.
Right. Wouldn't you understand if, like, the coach in the NBA said, it's 82 games, guys. We're playing four games this week. We've been on this long road trip. Like, we've got some stuff going on. Like, we're just sitting in. We're not playing them. Like, we're not worrying about game 61 or 41 or 22.
Right.
It's a long season.
But there's an issue there. There's a physical issue. When he says tightness, okay, so let's say he pushes forward, he puts Julio Jones in, and he pulls whatever was tight. And now you're out Julio Jones and A.J. Brown with pulled muscles. Then where are you? So the idea that you hold him back is not a bad idea.
But this is where Atlanta's going, see, we told you guys.
That's fine. Atlanta can worry about their problems. I'm not worried about what Atlanta thinks.
But I mean, that's
not about worrying about it, but what you should be worried about it if this continues this entire season.
But that's
Atlanta's going to tell you, this is what we saw the last couple of years.
But
this is what he does.
But he's not hurt. If this worked the way he wants to, he avoids an injury here, and there's not a worsening of the quote-unquote tightness.
Let me ask you guys a question. If this is the Chiefs, is Julio in? I think he's in.
What do you mean?
I think it's the balance of, yes, it was a tight game. It was 14-13. It was a division game. It's one you need to win.
Oh, the opponent was the Chiefs.
But he viewed it as, okay, I can have Julio available in an emergency if I absolutely need him, but I can win this game with the pieces that I have on the field, and I don't have to force it. Against somebody like the Chiefs or Buffalo or the Rams, you know, one of these high-tiered opponents, you probably say, I'm gonna need Julio.
It that type of game? It was 22-16, late. Like, a touchdown, they lose. I mean,
that's what I'm
like
saying.
The Broncos Jets game where it's like, yeah, the Jets, that game is over. I mean,
well, it was 14-13.
Yeah,
it all started.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. So why would there ever be a point where Mike Vrabel's going, hey, we got this without you, man. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of this without you. Like, did you feel that?
That's
way?
That's what I'm at. No, I didn't. But that's what I'm asking, and that's where I mean he's. You know, he's the head coach and has to make that judgment call. But it's also, it's balancing the whole season, too. This is game three.
Yes.
If this is, and that's the big concern, is this going to be an issue the whole way? Is he thinking that this is going to be an issue the whole way, that he's constantly going to have to, you know, look at maintenance and
I think the very beginning of training camp he came to that.
Right, and that's
conclusion.
What I'm about. That's my or. Or is he maybe being too careful? Because I've brought that up before, and coaches are too careful. They can be too careful. They can be too paranoid that they're going to get a guy hurt, and then they don't have him enough, and they're not stretched out, and then they pull something.
But you've got to like the confidence that he had in the guys that were going, because to their credit, they were getting the job done, and they continued to get the job done. And so I do think that in the moment is what Mike Vrabel is waiting. Hey, these guys, we got a little rhythm going here. I don't have to force it with Julio Jones. Now, what I'd really like to know, which he's not going to tell us, is how much was it Vrabel pushing Julio back and saying, Julio, I don't want to push it. I need you the long haul. Let's look long term here. Or how much was Julio saying, I'm a little tight.
Yeah.
I don't feel it.
You know, that's what I'd really love to know, the give and take there, communication.
Did he tap out or did he get taken out?
Because that's what Vrabel will never let out if there is a little bit of narrative of he kind of tapped out.
I just kind of feel like, though, it's B. That's what it feels like.
That's what you – well, listen, because you're influenced by what we were hearing out of Atlanta.
Well, true. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like that's not in the back of my mind, but I mean – the way he answered, the way he kept answering, and like you said, to the credit of the question keep coming up in different ways.
Forms. That's what everybody's really asking.
It just seems like he's doing what a head coach is supposed to do. Like he's protecting the situation. Whatever the situation is, he's protecting it, but it just kind of feels like he's protecting it because he doesn't want this to become a constant story. Or storyline in this market.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels
and
like.
I think what he needs to do.
Does anybody differ?
No, I don't.
Oh, definitely.
I'm totally with you. And I think what he needs to do is, you know, he likes to use the phrase, we don't talk about injuries, or this is the least amount I'm talking about injuries and all that stuff. This goes back to something that you've been saying, Darren. Like, help your guys out by all he had to do is say, you know what? He was a little bit tight. He might have tweaked something. We're going to watch it. I'll let you guys know when the injury report
comes out.
Didn't
want to risk it the rest of the
Didn't want to risk it.
Didn't want to risk
it's a long
haul. Yep.
And he was kind of saying that. He was
but he was tiptoeing around it.
He didn't ever get there.
Yeah, it just would have been – I think it would have played better if he had just come straight out with that. Said, you know what? He could have gone. He was a little tight. But then maybe he's got to put him on the injury list. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to do this without having to put – him on the list for some reason. I mean,
that never happens.
What about
it's a nebulous thing, like the maintenance and the tightness. Like, are we saying he's injured?
No.
Is that an injury?
Like, what about when asked about Taylor Lewan's performance? He's like, he's okay.
Yeah, he kind of downplayed that. And then the Josh Reynolds get it straight up. He was inactive. End of period.
Well, no, he was like,
inactive. Okay, we saw that.
Was he a healthy scratch?
Right, he didn't.
He was
say.
Inactive. That was his answer.
Yeah, like
that answer was inactive.
How about a follow up? Like, okay, we know he was inactive. Was it? Is there an injury there?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
a lot of questions.
Andrew disagrees with us our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com.
Let's see. People are going to be talking about this.
The media's determination to find something wrong or bad about Julio is nuts. Who cares? The game was won, and Julio has played great when he is on the field. Y'all seem so desperate to push your conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy.
No, it's just something that you knew you were going to need to manage from the get-go, from the very first press conference that they had to the very first press, maybe second press conference of training camp when Mike Vrabel announced you are not going to see Julio on the field a whole lot. He's going to practice some. He's not going to practice some. Be ready for it. And then this. So I think they've had this mindset. They've had the goals of how do we get the most out of Julio Jones over the long haul. I think in the big picture, that's what they're trying to do here. It just was pretty interesting how it went down yesterday.
We've had enough, and there's people that we value their opinions, and Chris Tomino is one of them. Guy's been doing it for a long time in the city of Atlanta. He kind of knows the lay of the land quite well. When we have him on this show and he says things about that, it's stuff that he's been talking about the last 2 years in Atlanta, I'm going to listen to him. Sorry if you don't agree, and that's fine. But I'm going to listen to what he has to say. And when he says this stuff is real and he's brought the stuff that he has on our show to the table, and he's been saying this for 2 years in that market, like, you don't have to agree with it, and that's your right. That's fine. But, I mean, you're asking us, you're asking me to say, I don't believe you. You're in that market. You're around him. I don't believe it. You're a conspiracy? No, it's not a conspiracy. Like, this.
I mean, the head coach said he was tight.
This stuff has been out there. I mean, the head coach just admitted he said the word tight. So it's not making something up that's nothing. I think the head coach, as much as he hates this subject, didn't say this is nothing, right? I mean,
and you know what else? We've got to say it. The guy that's benefiting and taking full advantage is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. He has done a nice job when he is the stunt double. He's going in there and he's making plays. That helps the situation a lot.
Well, and Andrew, to your text, and again, you're entitled to your opinion, but our jobs are to give opinions, and we're giving opinions based on people we talk to, based on fact that comes out, based on the games that we watch. I mean, Darren referenced what Chris Domino has told us. Jared has sources. He said it on his show. We talked about that at length. So, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire. We're not trying to dig anything up or start anything. I mean, we're simply having a conversation, giving our opinion. So, if
I was pro Julio to come here.
I was too.
I know. I say this show was like pro Julio. We wanted Julio Jones. We're certainly not trying to tear him down.
I mean,
I was pro about it.
I was pro Clowney, but I also knew that there was an injury history, and it didn't work because guess what? He got injured. It was a fact.
But they also kind of threw him in there. Mm-hmm. A little different, but they kind of threw him in there without practicing a lot. And would they have been better off load managing him a little bit? I don't know.
I don't know.
Couldn't have been much worse.
Changes the narrative on him ever, honestly.
They certainly didn't have a backup doing the job like they do here.
Has he been hurt in Cleveland yet?
Not that I know of.
They had a lot of sacks yesterday, this just in.
And they got a guy named Miles Garrett on one side. You and I could rush on the other side, maybe.
Nine sacks.
Clowney had two of them.
Did he?
He did.
And Miles Garrett had, what, 4.5? Have a day, man.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
4.5 sacks. The team leader for the Titans last year in sacks for the season was 5.5. Was it not? Was that not Harold Landry, 5.5?
Yes.
For the season? Miles Garrett had 4.5 yesterday. Although we also saw quite a performance by Chandler Jones in week 1 as well. Are we going to do NFL zingers to begin the fourth and final hour?
They're ready. Elijah is chomping at the bit. If you could see him right now, Darren, there is smoke coming out of the studio right now. It's just smoldering.
Then we must begin the final hour with that next.